you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
You're listening to Believe You Me with Michael the Count Bisbing.
You know my name yet?
And Anthony Lionheart Smith.
In progress. Four shots.
I just wanted to hide my vices.
Oh, well, you did want to hide it, but I don't blame you. Welcome to the show, everyone. Anthony Smith is in training camp. He's with us. Anthony Harrington's with us again with the magic carpet behind him. And Brian, how are you, buddy?
What's up, Mike? I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Yeah, good. Fantastic. Fantastic. Breaking news, Anthony Smith, Harrington, Brian, Jake Paul versus Nate Diaz. Thoughts, please.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one. I suspected we were going to get something coming from Nate here pretty soon because he kind of wasn't really doing anything. I don't know who else he would fight. I think it makes sense. Jake's coming off a loss. I feel better about it than I did before I seen Jake fight Tommy Fury, if I'm being honest. Because when he fought Anderson, you know, when he was fighting, you know, Woodley and Ashkin, I was like, oh my God, this is just crazy powerful. And he's an athlete. But Nate will force him to have to be technical. And it seemed like in the Tommy Fury fight, that was kind of where he had the problem. So I feel way better about it. Just no disrespect. I don't want Nate and his, you know, his followers to come attack me. But he's not a young man anymore. You know, he's been at it for a long time.
Right?
Yeah, he's been at it for a long time. But I feel good about it. It's exciting. It's exciting.
Isn't Jake a similar size to Jorge Masvidal at this point where it's like...
No. Nate Diaz used to fight the majority of his career at 155 pounds. Jake Paul weighed in in the 190s. I think last time it was 186 or 187 against Tommy. So this is the narrative for Tommy, mm-hmm. for Jake Paul. He's gone back to the well. He's gone back to fighting non-boxers who were past the prime, who were almost retired. Because guess what? When he did fight a boxer, he got fucking beat. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So his management are like, let's not do that again. Because if you lose two in a row, certainly in the boxing world, it is game over. So it's like, step away from that. Because
what's the better option? You know? Well, be another actual boxer.
Oh, no, for sure, absolutely. Listen, you can keep this pantomime, this circus going, whatever you want, and I'm not against people making money. You know, good for him. God bless. It's just all the talk about beating Canelo and being a world champion and being, I'm a crazy guy. No, you're not, bro. No, you're not. You're a Disney kid and you're making money through boxing and YouTube, and fair play to you. Nate Diaz, 38, smaller guy, fits the mold. Do you know what I mean? It's tailor-made.
I'm worried he's going to just bully him like Jake Paul's going to bully Nate.
Again, maybe my whole outlook has changed on it from the Tommy Fury fight, but I just don't see – if he stands on the outside and he's throwing big bombs at Nate Diaz, that could be a problem. But if he's wants to fight inside and fight a volume, high-paced fight, I think Nate Diaz wins that fight. If he just forces him to be really busy the whole time – And he just peppers him over and over and over. That shit will wear you out. And Nate Diaz can do that shit forever.
Anything? How are you doing? Okay, are you alive?
No, my lady's on the phone in the other room, so I'm trying to mute my mic. Oh. But I do have the quote from Nate. If you want it, that's what I was sitting.
Well. Nate Diaz's quote is out of his mind. He says, "I'm the biggest thing in boxing beside Canelo and besides Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder, Anthony Joshua, and the list goes on and on and on." They're just three off the dome.
He's saying Jake is the biggest thing in boxing, which...
Yeah, sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, and he says that he effed up Conor for acting out. Now I'm here again like a superhero of the real fight game, king of the real fight game.
Oh, I love Nate Diaz.
Yeah, I mean, he's out of his goddamn mind, but God bless him.
I love me some Nate Diaz, though.
Yeah, you can't hate him, man.
He's going to make some crazy money.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just trying to find the quote, because the thing is, did you see what's his face? Logan Paul. He was out talking a little bit of crap about Nate Diaz recently, talking to Ariel Helwani, saying they had an offer to Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz didn't take it. I'm a proven pay-per-view star and all the rest of it, and he won't take the fight. What is he looking for? Easier matchups? Well, I will say this. He's fighting your brother, and I wouldn't say that's an easier matchup. Jake is a more proven entity in the boxing world than what Logan is. So, you know.
And a bigger
Logan's
star.
Logan's going to do his, and a way bigger star, you know. So, I mean, listen, you know. Logan's going to do his thing. Jake's going to do his thing. Here's the statement from Jake Paul. He said, my last fight didn't go the way I wanted, but the result was the best thing that could have happened to my professional boxing aspirations. No, it wasn't. Professional boxers get beat. That can be the end of their career. And sometimes when you lose a fight, the cliche is, well, you learn more from your losses. He's not saying that. He's not saying he's learned from that. He's saying the best thing that happened to me is because now the world thinks I'm vulnerable. When I am more focused than ever. My team wanted me to take an easy fight like KSI. Should have done that, but I didn't. I went out and I'm taking on Nate Diaz, one of the most badass fighters of all time, who's not
a
boxer.
Oh, now he's a badass.
Who's
now
almost
he's a badass.
40 years old, who fought most of his career at lightweight. Do you know what I mean? Not talking shit on Nate. Having a bit of fun at Jake, that's all.
But that's... He talked all that shit about Nate and how he's a pussy and he can't fight. And now he's one of the baddest dudes in the planet when he's fighting him. That's the Jake Paul narrative. Like, trash people until you're ready to fight them. And then when you fight them, you build them up like they're this huge monster. So it looks better if you beat them.
Well, to be fair, that is kind of what you do. You do call someone a pussy or whatever. You diminish them and you insult them and antagonize them to try and get them to take a fight with you. So there's no harm in that. Let me ask you what you think about this. I've read that it's going to be a joint promotion between MVP, Paul's promotion, and what is it, Real Fights Incorporated, Nate Diaz's new thing. It's going to be a 50-50 split. So that means, you know, the gate, the TV revenue, the pay-per-view, the merchandise, you name it, sponsors, Diaz supposedly should get 50% of that. So I hope it's a massive venture for him. But here's my question. Usyk versus Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury offered him a 70-30 split and Usyk took it and the fight still didn't get made. Jake Paul's offering a very, very healthy split. It's like so good that Nate Diaz can't physically turn that down. And again, is that because... Other than that, it's a rematch with Tommy Fury. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that says a lot about his kind of where his brand is right now and where he what he thinks he can make with other people. Says a lot about maybe how the Tommy Fury fight did financially. Because I think if that's a more lucrative fight than what he anticipates that Nate Diaz is going to make, he probably would go back and run the Tommy Fury fight back right away. So.
Well, no, because the Tommy Fury fight, he could lose, and then
it's a bad deal.
It's bad. It's bad. Yeah,
that's not great. And Tommy Fury. Tommy Fury didn't look that good either. So, you know,
it looked all right, but he's a novice boxer for sure. You could see.
Okay. He wasn't a high level world class guy that's going to be contending for a title. I guess that's what I was getting at. So you lose twice in a row to that guy, that's a problem.
Yeah. Anyway, enough about Jake Paul. I do want to talk about this little statement that Nate Diaz gave, though, because Jake Paul, you know, whatever, fair play to him. I'm not hating him. We have a laugh at him, right? He goes out talking shit about every man and the dog, right? Because there's a lot of Jake Paul fans out there, and I see them, you know, I get DMs, I get people in the comments and stuff. It's like, stop hating on Jake. You're so pathetic. It's like, bro.
You couldn't hold Jake Paul's jock strap.
Yeah.
I get that one a lot.
He did a video with an eye patch on and sticking him a cork in his own eye on the end of a fork, mocking me. He mocks everyone. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. You talk a bit of shit.
He never says shit to me, ever.
Yeah. Well, let's knock him out. Nate Diaz came out and said this. He says, besides Canelo, Jake's the biggest thing in boxing. All right, we talked about that. But he said this. This is quite kind of interesting. I am here to conquer that. I am the king of combat sports. And then I'm headed back to the UFC to get my UFC belt. I effed up Conor for acting out, and now here I am like a superhero of the real fight game, the king of the real fight game. It's funny because, you know, he's claiming, I think he showed a picture on Twitter of, you know, when he landed that right hand or left hand on Leon in round five, and Leon was all wobbly. He's, you know, he's still and still or something like that, still the king and whatnot. But he says that he wants to fight Jake Paul, get a major payday, and then come back to the UFC.
I love thoughts. That. I love that. I don't know if he's going to come back and win a title, but I like that he just wanted to get out, get a huge bag, and then come back. Like I wish that there was more opportunities for you, for just MMA fighters in general to do that.
For me, yes. Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah. For all of us. Like if there's
I know. You went for you, and then you corrected yourself. Oh, thank you.
Well, no, like just UFC fighters in general. Like if you've got to a place where you can be, I don't know, you can be lucrative in another place, even if it's momentarily. I know Conor did it, but when Conor did it, it seemed like it disrupted a lot, you know? Like if I was, I don't know, if I was Nate Diaz, I don't know why I wouldn't want to do the same thing. You just take a step out, let the MMA thing kind of do whatever it's doing, and then just get a huge paycheck or two, and then come back and finish out your career as a UFC fighter. I think that's good for Nate. I think it's good for the UFC. I think the world, the MMA world would be a better place if Nate Diaz retires as a UFC fighter.
Yo, massively agree. Everyone wants to see him end his career there. As you said, not sure about being a champion, but he can still be a part of some mega fights. I mean, the third match with Conor McGregor is there all day long. Whether or not McGregor wins or loses his next three or four, does it even matter?
It doesn't matter.
The market, the appetite for Diaz McGregor 3 is always going to be there. From the UFC's perspective, I guess, their own, and this is, you know, an assumption. The fighters come, they sign with fighters, they promote them, they build them up, they become stars. And then if they let them go out somewhere else and then they fight somewhere else and they get beaten somewhere else, that star diminishes them. So then they lose a return on their investment potentially. So I guess that may be the argument from them why they wouldn't let people do that. But still, hey, listen, all in all, I'm very happy for Nate Diaz. It's great. I'm always happy when you see fighters, when they part ways with the company, they continue to do well. You know what I mean?
Well, and when they leave on good terms, because even after Nate fighting his last fight and him becoming, you know, his free agency was announced, because they have that, you know, that small period of time where there's, you know, some negotiating, some match or in some matching that happens. And then he's announced that he was completely a free agent, and he was looking other places. And then you still seen him at UFC events in Dana's section, and you still seen him in the back. Like he was very much still being treated as a UFC fighter. That always made me really happy. Like, I'm glad that there wasn't a whole bunch of animosity and a whole bunch of Dana hating on Nate and Nate talking shit about Dana. Like it was a very amicable separation. So it's just a kind of a feel good story. Let him go out and fight, whether he wins or doesn't win. Who gives a shit? Let him get hella paid and then come back and do what he's doing.
Yeah, well, Dana said the door's always open. He said this is Nate's house. And as you say, it is great to see. So we'll move on. So this weekend, Max Holloway taking on Arnold Allen. We're going to talk about those fights. On that card, we have Clay the Carpenter Guida, who I do believe will be joining us. Correct, Mr. Smith?
Yep, he will be here in about 25 minutes.
All right, so we've got him joining us soon. So we're going to go through some of the fights. Harrington, before we go to a non-MMA story, what is the biggest news here? So I guess International Fight Week, Alexander Volkanovski, he'll be fighting Yair Rodriguez. And I think it just broke as well. Brandon Moreno versus, who's he fighting? Harrington?
Alejandro
Pantoja. So that's two title fights, which is fantastic.
That's huge.
But the big rumor was Stipe versus John Jones. Now, I know you're friendly with Stipe, and you were supposed to be maybe going to go help him train after your fight.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know anything about that situation?
I haven't heard anything, you know, and I would be honest. I haven't heard anything about it. No rumblings. I did see Dana said somewhere though that John Jones went and fought, made history, did some incredible shit. And then, Harrington just posted it. John Jones came out, made quick work Oh, I lost it.
Yeah, no, he said, yeah, came out and made quick work of Garn and then poof, disappeared. Yeah, I saw him say this.
Yeah.
He said he went back to whatever he's doing. He's ready to fight. He wants Stipe, so we'll figure it out. That's the one that he wants. Yeah, but the big, you know, everyone assumed maybe, I don't think Dana or the UFC said it, but International Fight Week just seemed like a natural fit. And don't get me wrong, those two title fights, Volkanovski, Yair Rodriguez, that fight will be incredible. Brandon Moreno is just money every single time. And who'd you find? Pantoja? Pantoja is awesome as well.
I think Pantoja has a win over Brandon Moreno.
He does. So that's a great fight as well.
Yeah.
You know, but as a fan, I want Jones versus Stipe on there.
Mm-hmm. When John was tweeting at Stipe at some point in time, like he was, I don't know, kind of goading him a little bit, saying, you know, you said you wanted to do this in July. Where are you at? Like Stipe was being the holdup. So I'm not sure. But I haven't heard anything at all, which means that there's something happening. It's typically how the UFC goes. If there's a bunch of talk and whatever from both sides, usually nothing's happening. But I haven't heard anything. I haven't seen or heard anything from either one of them in a while. So that would tell me that something's going on. There's either some sort of negotiations or talks happening.
Well, fingers crossed, because that's the heavyweight fight we all want to see, regardless whether it's International Fight Week or this Saturday. Doesn't matter. All right, let's just talk about Roan really quickly. Listen, are you sick of clothes that don't fit very well? You know, you can't find the right size. They're not comfortable. And, you know, like certain shirts are specifically for wearing to the office. And certain times you need gym stuff or you need casual wear, whatever. Well, don't worry about that, because that's all a thing of the past, because that is where Roan steps in. Because men's closets, come on, they've been due for a radical reinvention, and Roan has stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and flexible set of products known to man, and here is why. They have products for every occasion. Roan helps you get ready for any occasion with the commuter collection, which offers the world's most comfortable pants. I'm telling you, these things are fantastic. They look beautiful. They're very nice, but they feel like track pants. They got dress shirts. They got quarter zips and polos. You never have to worry about what to wear when you have the Roan commuter collection. Now, with clothing, mobility is everything. Roan's comfortable four-way stretch fabric provides breathability and flexibility that leaves you free to enjoy what life throws your way, from your commute to work to your 18 holes of golf and then even to the bar afterwards. With Roan, looking good is easy. It's time to feel confident without the hassle. With Roan's, and this is a big one that I love about their stuff, wrinkle release technology. Wrinkles disappear as you stretch and wear the products. It's that easy. I mean, nobody wants to wear a shirt that's covered in creases and wrinkles. Looks terrible. That's a thing of the past. And also, for those sweaty people out there, you got the odor-free technology with Gold Fusion anti-odor technology. You'll be smelling fresh and clean all day long. And on top of that, Roan is 100% machine washable, so you can ditch the dry cleaner altogether and these things don't shrink. So, Roan commuter pants have next level mobility. They're some of the most comfortable, and you can find them at a beautiful price. The versatility of the Roan commuter pants are what make them the top pants for being at work and hurrying out to the gym or to get a drink with the boys down the pub. Okay, so check these things out. You will not be disappointed. Very versatile. The commuter collection can get you through any work day or whatever comes next. Head to R-H-O-N-E. Roan.com/believe. Use the promo code believe to save 20% off your entire order. That is 20% off when you head to R-H-O-N-E, Roan.com/believe and use the code believe. It's time to find your corner office comfort. Max Holloway, Arnold Allen going down this weekend. We'll just quickly talk about this because it's the return of Max Holloway. As we know, he was the featherweight king, lost three times to Volkanovski, one win over Kelvin Kattar, where he looked sensational. First two, debatable. The third one, Volkanovski shut the book entirely. Did you see that Max Holloway, I'm not sure if you saw this, did you see he was talking to Brett Okamoto, did a little interview. Did you catch any of that?
I did.
Yeah. Just for those anyone that didn't, Brett Okamoto kind of said, you know, do you still feel that you can beat Volkanovski? And the look on Max's face, it was just like,
he was offended.
Brah, what do you think I'm doing this for, man? I can't do the Hawaiian, but you know, but he was like, why do you think I'm doing this? If I don't think I can beat Volkanovski, then I'll just retire. I'm not here to be anything else other than the champion. And I, of course, respect and commend that view, and everyone should be striving for that. And Max Holloway is a phenomenal man, incredible fighter. And who knows? He might just be the guy to do it. But when you see Volkanovski, he's just getting better and better and better. Look at that fight against Islam. But still, for Max Holloway, I'm not saying he can't do it, but that is the attitude you've got to have.
Absolutely. And if you're Max Holloway, but I mean, best case, well, maybe. I'm going to say best case is Volkanovski drops the belt. But if that happens, it's going to be an immediate rematch. So he's going to have to play the long game a little bit. Whoever beats Volkanovski is going to have to do it twice, which is going to be a tough feat. Max hasn't been able to do it once. So it's hard to imagine someone right now in this day and age beating him twice. But
yeah,
that's – I don't know. I love Max's attitude. I would like to see him kind of switch up a weight class, though, because it does seem like Volkanovski's – you know, I'm not going to predict right now that Yair is going to lose to Volkanovski, but let's just assume he wins. Like, what are the chances that we get a fourth Holloway-Volkanovski fight when Volkanovski's won them all?
Well, we need to see a third. Or, a third Izzy versus Pereira, in my opinion. But by all accounts, that isn't happening. The whole team is shutting that down. I'm just looking at Max's Wikipedia. 31 years old. It's crazy because he signed with the UFC so long ago. And he's still 31. I'm just scrolling down. When was his first UFC fight? UFC. It was 2012. So 11. So 20 years old, he signs with the UFC. He's now 31.
I mean, crazy.
He's only been beaten by greats, Volkanovski, Dustin Poirier. I think that's on Conor McGregor back in the day.
Yeah, that was at 55 too. Poirier.
So Arnold Allen, 10 fight win streak, I believe it is. A lot of finishes in there. Last time I had, you know, you can't take anything away from Arnold because, you know, Cater went for a flying knee, landed weird, blew his knee out. But, you know, Arnold was looking good before that, smoked Dan Hooker.
Yeah.
Destroyed Dan Hooker. And Dan Hooker, remember that fight with Dustin Poirier? Remember that fight with Paul Felder? Mm-hmm. He's a capable man. Arnold smoked him. Give me your thoughts on the main event this weekend, please.
I think this is, well, I think it goes without saying, this is going to be Arnold Allen's toughest fight. But it may be the toughest fight for Arnold Allen in the whole division. He does get hit. He is a little bit hittable because he does get flying around. And sometimes I think he just loses his – I don't want to say loses his bearings, but he gets so confident and he's so aggressive. Sometimes he does leave himself open for some shots. And Max Holloway is one of the best boxers, you know, in the UFC ever. So
I'm the best boxer in the UFC.
While he's throwing punches and like no look.
Not only throwing punches, looks away from his opponent, and still pot shots
him. And then still slipping him. It just crazy. But Arnold Allen's got crazy power in his hands, and Max Holloway, we all love him. We love him for his fight style and his excitement. I believe he's absorbed more strikes than any fighter in UFC history ever. So he's...
Just look that up? Because that's a hell also, of a stat.
He's also very hittable. So... I think it's going to be crazy exciting. And if I was Arnold Allen, I would definitely mix in some takedowns and the up down and keep Max Holloway guessing, because if Max gets himself into a situation where he realizes he's just in a boxing match, it's going to be tough to beat.
No, very, very tough to beat. I think that's going to have to be Arnold's approach, try and mix things up. Mm-hmm. But Max Holloway, look at the people he's beaten.
Well, that's what Volkanovski has done too. Volkanovski really attacked his legs and then constant takedowns, even though he didn't really get that many, it was constant attempts and constantly made Max aware that if he wasn't mindful of the takedown, that Volkanovski was going to shoot. So I think just the threat of a takedown means a lot.
Well, that's what you touched on, leg kicks a second ago. That's what Arnold Allen does very well. He stands in southpaw, uses that lead leg to the orthodox leg, the one right in front of him, just chips away at it with little calf kicks all the time. Doesn't commit to it too much, just keeps chipping away. As you know, they add up, and then starts to go to work with the hands. It's a great fight. I'll be there in Kansas. I don't suppose you're going to be in Kansas, are you?
No. I've been doing is training. That's it. I've totally dialed in on this fight. It's no analyst gigs, no... I don't even do my radio show. The only thing I'm doing other than training is this podcast with you. That's it.
Absolutely.
Oh, Harrington showed up. Most significant head strikes absorbed in UFC history.
Knockdowns.
1,110 strikes with zero knockdowns.
So zero knockdowns absorbed in brackets. 1,110 with zero knockdowns. Wow, that's a lot of times to get hit in the head. You know, people bitch, he hit me. Imagine getting hit 1,110 times by a professional fighter that is trained in doing right. that.
And look at the people. Oh, my God. 3,217 strikes landed. That is insane. That's a lot of punches.
It's a hell of a lot. Give me your pick.
Man, it's hard to see.
Don't be sitting on this UK fence just trying to upset you.
I don't want to upset the UK fan base, but it's hard for me to see Max Holloway. It's hard for me to even think about Max Holloway losing two in a row to someone not named Alexander Volkanovsky. He's got to be motivated. The fact that he's still here tells me how motivated he is. He hasn't moved around weight classes. I don't know. I'm going to go Max Holloway. Because I have a hard time picking against him. I just think that it's a fantastic boxer. He's got great movement. He's hard to hit when he wants to be. He's been in there with the best. I mean, look at Volkanovski in there with Islam. Like, Max was in all of those fights, except for the last one. The last one he was pretty handedly beaten. But that's after you fought the same man times. I mean, Volkanovski's hit, he's a rocket ship as far as his growth and how good he's getting. He's had three looks at you. You know what I mean? Like, Volkanovski's seen it repeatedly over and over and over. Like, that's plenty of time to keep building a game plan. And not for nothing, Max Holloway hasn't necessarily evolved a whole shit ton. He's kind of the same guy he was five years ago. He's very good at what he does, but he's not any different than what he was. But I think if he's on point, I do think Arnold Allen is going to have a tough time.
And that's a very understandable viewpoint. No one's going to sit there and go, what do you mean? He said, well, he was the dominant champ. He was one of the greatest featherweights we've ever seen. It's Volkanovski that's beating him. Outside of that, it was McGregor a long time ago on Poirier, upper weight class. But you got to give Arnold Allen his due. He is there for a reason. He's earned this. And Max Holloway holds the keys to the universe for Arnold Allen. Because if you beat Max Holloway, you're fighting for that damn title next. Whoever wins between Rodriguez and Volkanovski, that's your present. That's your reward, But it's the weirdest thing, isn't it? Because that's what we want. In mixed martial arts, like again, not going back to Jake Paul talking crap, he's going for an easy fight there. In mixed martial arts, you go out there, you fight, and the reward is an even harder fight. You just say, I want to win this one so I can get an even harder fight. Come on, let's go. Do you know what I mean? But that's called climbing up the rankings, what I mean? So if anyone could do it, Arnold's the man. I've got so much respect for him, the way he carries himself. He's a hell of an athlete, very, very strong, well-rounded skills. He takes this really seriously, and he's on a 10-fight win streak. So we'll leave that one there because I can't make a predict. Harrington, if someone was to die and you were to miss them, apparently science tells us now that their consciousness can be uploaded digitally to some kind of microchip phenomenon, correct? Well, you're on mute, so that's a good start story. For the microchip. Work, Harrington. Good job.
LVP. I totally understand.
Back away from the microphone. Let me ask you this. You're distracted, aren't you, just because aura. I've got three kids. You muted your microphone. There was stuff going on back there. We know it.
No, I'm literally just trying to get a Clay Guida question tweet out. But a new scientist, right, he's started like a bunch of these AI startups. And one of them, he says to record, like get as much video and audio recordings of your loved ones as possible. Because with his new model, you're going to be able to upload that as possibly as soon as the end of this year. And your loved ones will be able to live on with you for eternity.
Yeah. So basically what it means is if this AI technology can get enough video recordings of you, enough voice notes or whatever, they can kind of figure out your personality and then based upon that, predict how you would talk about certain things, answer certain questions, and just so you could have like a memory of them and you could even have conversations. Would you want that, or do you think that would just be too creepy and it wouldn't allow you to grieve and move on with your life?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. I think that that just delays the grieving process, doesn't it? I don't know. I think I just would always know that's not real, you know? I don't know. I think it would fuck with me more than not.
I think Rebecca will be like, are you fucking serious? I finally got rid of that asshole. What do you think I want him living on for eternity? I was going to say the same thing.
Like, my wife wants that.
Yeah.
Anthony's like, I survived like, I don't need all
you
the
interrupting me every 2 minutes on the podcast, and it's not even a real person. Piss off.
No, that just seems really creepy. I do. I think it interrupts the grieving process, but I don't know. Now we're getting into this, like, creating people and cloning, and I'm sure Brian's got some sort of conspiracy on this.
Well, let's say Brian
shouldn't be doing this. This is scary.
No, but that's all. It's only like I saw something recently. What was it? It's basically a program, isn't it? It's not a real person. They're not creating in a laboratory, taking cells and all the rest of it and cloning you. Cloning, yeah. It's not cloning.
I think it was the new Blade Runner where he had the AI girlfriend. I think that's the movie that it was. It's a recent science fiction movie. But it completely destroyed this man's ability to, like, relate to real people because he had this perfect AI girlfriend. So, I mean, that's a danger where it's just going to turn everybody into bigger autists than they already are, you know, where people won't be able to talk to other people because they didn't program.
Well, the art of conversation is certainly going out the window, certainly amongst the new generation, because they're staring at the phones all the time. And as you said, Brian, that is an interesting point.
The movie was Her. I'm sorry, Harrington corrected me.
I was trying to think when you were talking about that. There's a Netflix show. Oh, Altered Carbon. Have you seen that?
I believe it's a similar premise, right?
Similar premise, yeah, correct. Yeah. We know Anthony hasn't seen any of them, so we won't
even
go there.
I'll just hang out over here. You know, even my friends now are starting to... I was at dinner last night. Actually, my direct next-door neighbor lives directly next door to me, was traveling for work. He just happened to be in Denver, so we went to dinner last night. And he was like telling me a story. He's like, yeah, it's like that movie. And he like says the movie's like... We know you don't know that movie. Like, are you fucking serious? Like, now I got my friends making fun of me about it.
That's great. No, yeah, I saw in the comments the other day, someone was like, Mike, of course he hasn't seen it. I'm like, dude, that's kind of the joke. But also, it's for the people listening. Do you recognize the quote? Do you know what it is?
Right.
Talking of movies, excuse me, last night, because I leave for Kansas, and then from here I go to Spain, you know, for a little filming. So I'll be away for a bit. So we did a little movie night last night. We did Con Air. Have you seen Con Air?
Seen it, yeah. I used to watch Con Air with my mom all the time.
I haven't seen that in years. And Lucas is loving like the 80s, 90s genre of films.
Yeah.
So I said, right, Con Air or Face Off? He said, what they're about. So I explained them all to them. Mm-hmm. And then I put a poll on Twitter because I remembered Kill Bill as well. Kill Bill won the poll on Twitter, but it might be a bit much. You know,
yeah.
He's 12. He's not quite ready for that yet. Certainly the scene. Have you seen Kill Bill?
No. I've seen Face Off and Con Air, though.
No, they're classics. They're classics. Yeah. When Kill Bill, there's a scene where she's dead in a hospital and a guy who comes out with a jar of Vaseline. He's going to do something very, very inappropriate. I'm like, okay. Maybe we won't show that to the 12-year-old. So we watched Con Air. He was glued to it. And I'm telling you, they don't make action movies like that anymore. That is nonstop. Bananas, insane action from start to finish. It never ends.
It's a great movie. It's a really great, you know, that I guess a lot of the movies that I used to watch all the time, I always watched with my mom. So like I was a little kid when Con Air was like the shit. But Con Air is like one of those movies that a lot of people have actually seen. So like I drop Con Air quotes pretty often actually.
Do you know what the funny thing is? And again, I apologize for the non-Con Air seers. There's the Steve Buscemi, you know, the character that comes on and he's all like masked up like Hannibal Lecter, right? Yeah. And he's killed like 57 people. And he's even talking about on the plane how he killed this woman and he walked around with her face as a mask.
Wearing her head as a hat or like something.
That. Yeah, wears her head as a hat or something, yeah. Well, it turns out at the end of the film, it cuts to him and he's somewhere and he's having a cocktail somewhere and he's like, you're all on his side and you like the guy. And I was saying to Lucas last night, I'm like, this is weird. Why are we rooting for him? He's murdered 50 people. He's walking around with people's hats on their faces. But Steve Buscemi, that actor, he just has that ability. Yes, Harrington.
He didn't kill the little girl. That was it. He
That's why you were rooting for him.
He didn't kill the little girl. That's all it takes in this modern day and age. They will quickly forgive and forget. Just don't kill little girls. Not a bad motto to live your life by. All right, MMA. What have we got? What have we got before Clay Guida joins us? Oh, so Gilbert Burns and Masvidal, as we know, they fought last week. Gilbert claimed that Masvidal was greasing quite heavily. And I thought this was nice of Gilbert. Gilbert came out and he basically took it back. He said, I'm trying to find the actual quote. He said, to be honest, I wish I was in the moment after the fight. I think I made a mistake accusing Jorge of doing that. Right now, Jorge's done. He's not fighting anymore. I don't want to be the guy pointing fingers and making excuses. I just want to make that statement. I want to apologize to Jorge for the things I said, accusing him of using. I still think he was more slippery than usual, but I can't say that he did that pointing fingers. So I apologize to Jorge and his team. And once again, what an absolute class act.
Yeah, that's tough, too, to come out and make those kind of allegations and then walk it back and kind of be a man and say, listen, maybe he was slipperier than I expected or slipperier than, you know, other people I've fought or trained with or whatever. But he's right. He doesn't really have any proof of that. So that's a pretty high stakes allegation. And I'm sure he had some people close to him like, hey, like maybe you feel like that, but you can't say it unless you have any kind of proof.
Well, it's you know, obviously it's frowned upon. It's illegal in the rules. Mm-hmm. The referees check you. Yeah, there's commission members staring at you, literally in the corner rooms, in the locker rooms, making sure you don't do that. And you get kind of checked as you're walking in. Of course, Gilbert knows better than us how slippery he was and maybe has that kind of opinion. Mm-hmm. But what I like is that he's like, hold on a minute, hold on. This isn't fair. It's his final fight. He's retiring after a legendary career. And the headlines right now is because I am saying that in a fight where I got my hand raised anyway. So I think it just shows what a man Gilbert Burns is, you know, because even if he does believe it, he's rescinding that, he's taking it back, and he's actually apologizing. Are you a man that is good at apologizing, Anthony, or does that come hard for you?
The actual apology is tough for me. The actual apology is tough. I have no problem admitting I'm wrong. It's because I always think apologies are bullshit. I just never take apologies very serious. It's just like, I'll accept, like if someone says, hey, I did this wrong. I should have done this. I need to do this better. Then you wait and you see how they react. And if they do it different the next time, you're like, okay, that person is genuinely apologetic. But I think it's just the way I grew up. I heard, just heard it all the time. And then people keep doing the same fucked up things. So it's just the word or phrase I'm sorry or I apologize never meant a lot to me. So I don't say it that much, but I admit that I'm wrong and I change the way that I move forward. And that's how I apologize, by not making that same mistake again.
Well, that is better and way more effective, because words are cheap. Anyone can say, I'm sorry, you know.
Right.
I don't mind admitting I'm wrong or saying I'm sorry, although I have a lot of practice at it.
Me too.
I have to admit I'm wrong and apologize a lot. My wife, Rebecca, you can't get her to apologize. Oh my God, no. She doesn't like to apologize, do you, babe? She's not here, thank God. To your point, see, the thing is, if you want an apology, if I'm on the receiving end, if I'm on the other end, if we reverse it, and I want an apology, I feel like I'm owed an apology. I want that apology. You know what I mean? And like, I'll be waiting for it. I need the apology. Do you know what I mean? And then I'm good.
Well, see, my wife has never apologized, because if you ask her, she's never done anything wrong, ever.
Rebecca and never apologized.
She's never wrong. And even if she is, it's because of something I did. So actually, I need to apologize for making her make a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the way it is. Because I'm like,
you married someone that's perfect too.
I'm like, babe, nice. just apologize. You were in the wrong. That's fine. I just want you to recognize you're in the wrong and apologize. I said, oh my God, what is it about apologies? I'm like, well, it's not about the apologies. It's about you accepting that you were the wrong one this time, that it's all your fault. And then it never happens. And we're arguing now over not the thing we were arguing about, just whether or not there's going to be an apology. There's an MMA manager I had a bit of a run-in with last year. And then he was a dick. He was very, very rude, what he said. And I was pissed at him. And then I bumped into him. No, he said something to me. He gave me a lot of shit right? And I was commentating, so I couldn't get into it. I just went to the toilet. I came back. I interjected. I was getting some food. There was a conversation going on. I gave my opinion, and he abused me, right? So I went away because I was commentating. I didn't have
That's
long.
The worst part, because you stew about it. I start here, and then over time, I come down, and then I can come back, and we can talk about it. But you ramp up as time goes.
I wind myself up, but I'll be very calm about something, and then I start talking to them about it, and I start telling them what they've done, and then I start getting more and more frantic. and then I'm like, what am I doing? But I saw that guy in Singapore, and I was like, he said something. I said, "Yo, bro." I said, "You're out of line, man." I said, "You owe me an apology." And he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry." And I'm like, see, now you're pissing me off. You know what I mean? I said, "Now you better tread carefully, dickhead." Do you know what I mean? Because you do owe me an apology. You were bang out of line, and I asked you for an apology. Anyway, whatever. Who cares? We're talking about apologies. And I apologize to the believers for going off course.
No, I love that story.
All right, let's talk about chalk.com. C-H-O-Q, chalk.com. What do they do? Well, they help you replace that fading testosterone in your body, but they do it in a natural way, okay? No nonsense, no crap ingredients, nothing that's bad for you, all natural, but it will boost the testosterone. As a man, testosterone is such an important part of your DNA, of your makeup as a man. If you're not losing weight, if you're gaining weight, if you feel unmotivated, if you just generally, you know, you just haven't got that get up and go in life, you're working out like a madman, you're not losing weight, maybe you're just feeling flat, maybe libido is suffering as well. All of that, well, I say all of it, there's a good chance that a lot of that is down to a dip in your testosterone. As you're getting older, of course, that's what happens, okay? Happens to all of us. And this will, in a natural way, help you boost it back to where it was. Listen, the supplement industry is full of nonsense, it's full of garbage, and it's full of dirty ingredients. Chalk are proud to stand above the rest in clean, pure, and healthy products. So Chalk Daily, as I say, it's the cleanest research-based testosterone booster, which is available right now. And along with Chalk Daily, be sure to check out their Male Vitality Stack, STAQ, and the Stack Ultra. Listen, you want to stay in shape. You want to be feeling great. You want to be motivated. You want to be being a good partner to your loved one. All those things will get better if your testosterone is where it needs to be. You'll feel better. You'll look better. I mean, hell, Jesus Christ. What more do you want? Go to chalk.com. That is CHOQ.com. When you're there, use the code BISPING. You will get a huge 35% off your entire order. Pretty good deal. That is chalk.com, promo code BISPING for a massive 35% off the most natural testosterone booster available on the market. What else have we got? Amanda Nunes. I think we talked about that. We never talked about Kevin Holland, sadly, and we apologize, given the theme of the show, to Kevin Holland. He had a great win over Santiago Ponzinibbio, and what a stoppage that was. However, Harrington, come on, please, and give us the details of this. We like your presence on the show. You are a part of it, so please join us.
So Kevin Holland said that he needed surgery after the Stephen Thompson fight. He had badly injured his hand, obviously. He said that he wasn't even medically cleared until late in March to go full contact in 4-ounce gloves. He didn't even try hitting mitts in 4-ounce gloves until the day of the fight. And he said once he started punching, this isn't going to go too well. So he said his whole game plan going into the Ponzinibbio fight was rely on the jab, right? Like, don't just try to get slaps in with the other hand, but for the most part, just get it done with the jab. And he certainly did.
Yeah, well, it was a massive hook, though, that finished it. And what a shot that was. I can't believe we didn't talk about this on Monday, because Ponzinibbio is as tough as they come, had a great career, very capable, face planted. I mean, and the hook of Holland, I mean, his arms are so long. Ponzinibbio probably thought, what's up, Clay? Ponzinibbio thought he was safe.
What's up?
Good, brother.
Good. Hey, I'm just running down the hallway to my room, and I'll set up outside in the balcony if that works for you guys. I'll be ready to go.
346 minutes later.
Now we're better.
Perfect.
Beautiful. Awesome. Beautiful.
Thank you guys much. I just got done. I had to go over to the other building to do photos and stuff like that. So I just got dropped off in the shuttle and ran up here. So you guys, I'm ready to rock and roll when you are, gentlemen.
No. Well, we're rolling already. Clay, thanks for your time. You got a big fight Saturday night. I was just looking at your record. I didn't realize you have had 60 professional MMA fights. 60. I mean, we were talking the other day, 50 something. What Anthony's had is crazy. 61 fights this Saturday. Of course, listen, you're an experienced guy. You're 41 years old, but 61 fights. I mean, talk to me about that ride, the experience that you've been on through all these years.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Michael, because it doesn't really seem like that. To this day, I still feel like I'm, just still evolving in the sport. I still feel like it's my first fight week every time, man. There's just something about fight week that's just so special. It's always about just the cool things we get to do during fight week, the people we get to meet, the fans, all the different places we get to visit. It's always been for me about the journey as much as the destination, what we get to do along the way, the just amazing places like, Kansas City. I'm back I'm from the Midwest. I'm from the Chicago area. So Kansas City is, I think, one of the most underrated towns, underrated cities in America, man. Talk about sports. You talk about hardcore fans, fight fans. This place is going to erupt come Saturday night, man. It's already starting to build a lot of momentum. And there's a lot of stuff going on in town. We went over to the other building to do photos and stuff. And there's volleyball tournaments going on, Division I tournaments. You could tell it's just a hardcore, hardworking city, man. And it's always fun to come back and fight in front of a Midwest crowd, man. So, it doesn't seem like 60 fights, guys. Getting back to your question, I can't believe I had my first fight 20 years ago in 2003, man. It's pretty wild to look back and be like, wow, where's the time gone? And I honestly did not know we had that many fights. My record is, man, it's ugly. You know what I mean? We've had a lot of fights. We fought a lot of, a lot of veterans, a lot of up and comers. And to me, that's what it's all about, is just, just fighting, a larger crowd, basically, trying to fight, some of these, maybe not up and comers, but kind of newer guys on the roster, and then fighting, veterans like we have in the past. So to me, it's always about, having a new challenge that intrigues me and that gets me more motivated each time.
Clay, I always want to take the opportunity when, we get someone that's, or even when I just have an opportunity to talk to someone that's had a bunch of fights, been around and seen the game evolve from kind of what MMA was when you started in the early 2000s to where it is now. Like, looking back, like, is there a couple moments of your career that stand out, or that, have a really fond memories or moments in fights or something that just has always stuck out to you over all the, over 20 years?
Man, there's so many. It's hard to just pinpoint a couple, but obviously I always go towards the most meaningful ones, I think, to my family, to my coaches. And that was when we got the call to fight in Strikeforce for the lightweight title against mm-hmm. Josh Thompson. And that came in a transition point in our career. I had won, if you look back in 2005, I think I fought like maybe 10 or 12 times in a year, because my brother's mindset and ours was fat. We want to fast track our way to the big show, to the UFC or what other big organization at the time. So I think I might've fought like 12 or 13 times in that year. It was something crazy. And then, early in 2006, we had my first fight on King of the Cage, and Monty Cox, for some of you guys that have been around for a while, may have fought for Monty Cox, on some of his promotions. And he asked me to fight on King of the Cage, I believe. Correct. Yeah, I fought in January or February in the Quad Cities, which is like Moline, Illinois, which is right on the border of Iowa. So we all went down there, and I fought a guy on a day's notice. And I was already on a huge winning streak. I think I won 15 fights in a row. We were beating everyone, strikers, wrestlers, jiu-jitsu guys, And I'm like, oh, this guy's taking a fight on a day's notice or a couple days notice. I'm gonna run buzzsaw this guy. And he came out, and I just remember how bright the mat, the yellow mat was in King of the Cage. It was like blinding. I'm in a big arena, an arena that I wrestled at in like seventh or eighth grade, but kids open, So it was cool. I got to wrestle there when I was 75 pounds, 85 pounds or whatever. And then I got to fight there when I was in my mid 20s, on, my road to the UFC or whatever. And, this kid came out, he was like 6'2", way taller than me, way bigger than me. Like most of my opponents already are. And he was tall, string bean, cause he had to make 155. And I was just like, wow. I looked up at him like, this guy's huge. I'm going to take him down. Next thing you know, he duck unders me. I didn't realize he was a wrestler. He duck unders me, takes my back and chokes me out in like a minute. And time stood still, man. I was like, wow, I literally just like embarrassed myself in front of my family, my fans on a huge card at the time. Cause it was like when they used to have like, you know, when King of the Cage was televised, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, man, did I just blow my shot? You know, did I just, you know, blow my opportunity to, you know, get on a big card, whatever. And at the time we had already, signed the deal to fight Josh Thompson a month later. So right after in the locker room, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I just lost this fight against this no-name guy. They're going to pull the contract for the Strikeforce one. But anyway, they kept their word. Scott Coker kept his word on it. We still got to go out there. And then I fought Josh Thompson in a 5-round fight and just took him down like 10 times. And, you know, we got our hand raised. We won the lightweight world title, you know, in Strikeforce in 2006. And to me, that was a very pivotal point in my career, you know, fighting on small regional shows against relatively no-name guys. I was still a no-name guy for just out of the Midwest, even though I had a bunch of wins. But then they started putting us up against, I fought him, and then I fought Gilbert Melendez. I lost the belt to him in a split decision. And then I went to Shooto to fight in, you know, the smaller Pride organization for the little guys that Gomi and Kawajiri and all these guys fought on. So I started fighting some of these other really cool organizations. And then I fought in the WEC once. And then I remember we got the call to fight UFC 64 and make our debut in 2006, man, October 14th in the UFC. It seems like forever ago to some people, but to myself, it seems like it was 6 months ago. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
having that, all that happened in 1 year was just incredible to me. And then we won our UFC debut. We won by submission, by rear naked choke, and we got submission of the night. You know, 20 grand to me is still a lot of money to have that, you know, on my UFC debut when I made 1,500, you know what I mean? Like that was wild. I thought I was rich, but I was very, very, you know, raised in a family, put your money away, save your money. And I still probably have that 20 grand packed away. You know what I mean? It's
just, nice. Nice.
That's just how I was raised by my parents, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you fought all over the world. Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. I mean, it's funny you talk about old times there and things like that. As you're getting older, it does still feel like yesterday. I mean, people talk about the 80s or the 90s to me, and I feel like that was yesterday. That's like 30 or 40 years ago, which is insane. You touched on something there, and I want to ask you about this. Fighting all over the world, given the experiences, seeing the change in mixed martial arts, how it's become such a global sensation these days, going through that, and this is a tough business, having your brother there right by your side in your corner, slapping your face, just being along for the ride as an emotional support, a training partner. Talk to me about how beautiful that's been to have him by your side throughout this career.
Man, Michael, you nailed it on the head, man. You know how important it is to have that one individual, that one person, you know what I mean? That you have to have there with you when you compete, man. And Big J, he's the one, man. He was there at all of my sports, you know, when I was a kid, you know. Big J played baseball, I played baseball. He wrestled, I started wrestling. He played football, I got into football. It's just, you know, you follow and you people you look up to, you follow in their footsteps. And so I did with Big J, and that's how I started fighting. You know what I mean? I went to watch him fight Adrian Serrano back in 2003 when I started fighting at a strip club by accident. You know, I jumped in there on literally an hour's notice. I had no mixed martial arts training. I wrestled in junior college with my brother in Illinois at Harper College. And I went to watch him, you know, for his professional debut. And I ended up just jumping on the card and I fought the heck I was doing. But I fell in love with competing again. It gave me that college, you know, competition, you know, spirit again. I was like, oh, this is it, man. This MMA stuff, this is for me. I'm no good at it, but I know my tenacity, our toughness, and, you know, just always being in shape and, you know, just being able to find a sport where I can grind. This is going to be, you know, this is right up our alley, man. So Jay's, he's been a staple, man. You know, he had a ton of fights too. You look at the who's who, my brother, he fought Jeremy Horn. He fought Vernon Tiger White. I mean, you name it. My brother's fought just about everyone in the WEC, in Bellator, in, Elite XC. I don't even know if people really remember that organization.
Oh, yeah. But
yeah, he's fought pretty much everywhere, man, all over the world. So my brother has been in such a huge inspiration to me. And, Yeah, he's he got me into the sport, man. And besides,
yeah, you know, I'm not a old man by any means, but I do remember floating around the regional scene back when I way before my UFC days, and seeing the Guidas, you know, fighting some of these organizations. I've actually watched your brother fight in Chicago. Would have been like 07, maybe. I remember watching him fight back then. But the last one for me, Clay, obviously you know, we have the same management. I hear a lot of Lloyd's fishing excursions and stories with, you know, you taking him fishing in Florida and him and his son. So we got to get this BYM fishing trip down here pretty soon. But what else do you do in your spare time? Because I know you're kind of a free spirit. You like to fish. You like to travel. What do you do when we're not seeing you fighting? Because I guess sometimes you kind of go unseen for a while.
Yeah. Everyone knows I'm probably either if I'm not on a fishing boat, I'm either at a concert backstage or side stage or somewhere out in the crowd, man, or I'm at a Cubs game, a Bears game, any professional sporting event, man. If I'm in town, because I travel so much, I always, that's two things I look for. When I'm either on the flight to the town or the city, whatever, I'll just look up what their professional team is. If it's baseball or football, I'll go catch a game. If there's a concert in town, there's this app called Jambase. I type in the city. I put in like a 60 to 100 mile radius, because if there's a band that I haven't seen that I like, I'm willing to drive that far to go see a live band, man.
Nice.
Music is it's my passion, my inspiration, and professional sports, man. So that's why we came up with Gills and Throws of Guida. We take our clients fishing, and then we take them to a UFC event, introduce them to the fighters, take them backstage. We take them to a concert. We work with bands like Zac Brown Band, with Metallica, with Slightly Stupid. We get to introduce them to the band, take them, you know, backstage, kind of hang out. We'll take them to a professional sporting event and just, you know, kind of give them the all access experience, man, because to me, that's what it's all about. I love just seeing live music. I love seeing these guys perform on stage, and there's nothing like professional sports to me, man. It's an honor that people come to watch us compete and perform, but what drives me is seeing them, you know, do it live and being in their arena, their stadium, their stage, man. That's what it's all about for me.
Whenever Clay Guida walks to the octagon, I mean, of course, people know about your relentless pace, your crazy wrestling, your phenomenal ability. You're always in exciting fights. But there's three things that people are always watching for. It's the walkout, which looks exhausting, okay? There's the slap in the face from the brother, which is just awesome, and everyone's waiting for that. And then, between the rounds, the massive burp. Come on.
There it is.
Give us a burp, Clay. Give us a burp. Knock one out for us.
Dude, I wish I could give you guys one right now. I haven't even eaten today, man. And I'm like just a couple pounds overweight. I've had a busy day of running around doing media. I haven't even had a chance to eat, man. I've had a couple berries, but once I eat and there's something about it, just the adrenaline. People ask me, like, dude, why do you burp all the time in your fights? I'm like, honestly, yeah. I don't know. I think that's just my adrenaline pumping so much, and something just pushes it out of me, man. You know it's going to be a good fight when we're in the second round and I have to push my coaches out of the way, or the cameraman or the cut man out of the way, and I just let one go, man.
Yeah. Every time you push them out of the way, it's brilliant. I love it.
No, it's going to be a good fight, man.
I'm not going to ask you for a prediction for the fight, because, listen, we all know the drill. We're all going to go out there. You're going to fight. You're going to give it your all. You're going to try and get Rafa Garcia out of there. He's a tough man, I'm sure. It's all respectful between the pair of you. You're always that kind of guy. But how do you feel about the fight coming into this Saturday?
Oh, my banger. He gets in there, and he's fought for being a relatively, you know, young guy still. He's fought kind of the who's who of up-and-comers and some pretty big names, man. So, and he's been very active, and I like to see that in a young fighter that he wants to test himself. You know, he's fought a lot of quality opponents, man. And I love the fact that he took this, you know, this challenge, man, because that says a lot about him and where he wants to go and where he's at in his career, because that just them wanting to challenge themselves and climb the ladder, man. So I think our styles, you know, this could be could have fight of the night, you know, written all over it. He tends to, you know, he poses some threats as far as his tenacity. He's got a solid chin. He likes to wrestle. He's got definitely got a good ground game. I know he's got a couple of good camps he trains with, and I know He's got, you know, that Mexican heart and Mexican pride where these guys just, they come forward and they will fight until the bitter end. And to me, that is what a true mixed martial artist is all about. That's what the fans want to see. And that's what the organization wants to see. And this kid has all of those qualities, which makes for an amazing, amazing battle.
As do you, my brother, as do you. So Thrills, as Gills and Thrills, what is that, gillsandthrills.com?
Gills and Thrills with Guida. Yep, gillsandthrills.com. You got it, correct.
Gills and Thrills with Guida. Check it out. We will be taking you up on that kind offer, Clay. We've been talking about doing some kind of outdoor pursuit activity for quite some time. So we're going to show up. We're going to catch some fish.
For sure. We got some spots open if you guys want to. We don't even have to go offshore, guys. Yeah, we don't have to go offshore, you know, because sometimes I know guys get a little bit seasick. A lot of the stuff we do inshore, man, we'll be in a 3 foot of water and we'll catch an 8 foot bull shark. You know what I mean? We'll go catch a Goliath grouper in 10 feet of water. You know what I mean? So you're not getting seasick out there. So that's what it's all about, man. I'd love to see Anthony get on about a 300 pound Goliath grouper, dude, and just see your forearms just burn out, man. And just see you look around and pass around to somebody, man. But you got to start what you fit. Yeah, you got to finish what you start, man.
Sounds amazing. Listen, I'll probably see you tomorrow, Clay. So with the fight and me. And so all the best for the rest of this week. If I see you tomorrow, great. If not, whatever. Enjoy. Thank you for your time. Really appreciate it. Always love watching your fight. Love what you've brought to the world of mixed martial arts. And the place is a better place with you involved. So thank you very much.
Gentlemen, thank you guys for all the kind words. Michael, we appreciate it. All the best to you and the family. Anthony, go out there, have fun, kick some butt, and do what you do best, man. Put on a show, man. We love watching you.
I appreciate it, man. Take care.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All the best, Clay. Take care. So, as we know, Clay, he's the best. Thrills and Gills. There's a lot of energy. Kansas City is a great place. Says it's beautiful. Says it's got the river. The weather's nice.
It's actually not a bad place.
Wi-Fi sucks.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi is not the greatest. He was talking about the volleyball tournaments going on. They just transitioned. Remember, I was just there over the weekend. The fucking volleyball. But I was just there. So now the tournament's just the older girls. Same place, though.
Yeah.
And the barbecue's pretty good. You got to go to Slaps Barbecue.
Slaps? I've never been to Kansas Barbecue. City. What should I expect?
It's like, I don't know, some Midwest hearty people. If you're down, I don't know where you guys are staying. Yeah, it's nice. Yeah, it's not bad.
It's a nice hotel where we're staying. Apparently, he said the word, but I'm not going to say it on here. Clay Guida, love it. Love what he brings to the table. He's the man. As I said, I had to ask him. His brother slaps him in the face.
Who gives a fuck? I think he's at the point in his career where like the wins and losses don't even matter. We just want to see him perform. They're going to be fantastic. Of course, he cares because he wants his second half of his money. But I don't even know. I guess you just looked at his record, but I can't tell you if he's won two in a row, lost three in a row, won two, one. I don't even know. It doesn't matter. I'm still going to watch.
He won. Hold on. Yeah. He won his last one against Scott Holzman. Before that, lost to Claudio Puelles, got caught in a knee bar. Before that, beat Leonardo Santos. Great fight that he actually built that one.
That was a submission, right?
American wrestling versus Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Yeah. In that occasion, the wrestling won out. And yeah, you know, Dude, he's fought everybody. BJ Penn, Michael Johnson, Joe Lauzon, you know, Brian Ortega. The list goes on. Too many. Chad Mendes, Gray Maynard, Benson Henderson, Anthony Pettis, Takanori Gomi, Rafael Dos Anjos, Kenny Florian, Diego Sanchez. A win over Nate Diaz. Do you know what I mean? It's wild.
Nate Diaz should come back to the UFC and get that rematch.
We're going old school. Tyson Griffin, Dean Thomas.
Wow, Tyson Griffin?
That's how long this guy's been around for. Anyway, God bless him. Fair play to him. All right, let's talk about one of our sponsors, Manta Sleep. Listen, sleep is very, very important. High-level athletes and performers, they know quality sleep is the foundation for everything good that happens in life. And driven by that belief, Manta is on a mission to give light sleepers control and mastery over their sleep. So with Manta Sleep, you can maximize the enjoyment of life and unlock your full potential. The masks are 100% blackout for deeper sleep. They are made of soft and durable materials, so you'll never have to worry about it stretching out or falling off. And you can check out the brand new sound mask, which features razor-thin Bluetooth headphones with a 20-hour battery life. And as always, Manta, because they're so confident in their products, they offer a 60-day risk-free trial and free shipping in the USA. Listen, if you get a crap night's sleep, if you struggle to sleep well, these things will really help you. We've blacked out unbelievably. You won't even feel the thing on your face. If you travel a lot, if you're on a plane, again, these things come in fantastically. Go to the website, mantasleep.com. See their full selection of sleep accessories. They've got body pillows. They've got weighted blankets, sleep machines, everything that a light sleeper need. And be sure to check out mantasleep.com and use the promo code Bisping to get 10% off the perfect gift for you or that light sleeper that everybody knows. Trust me, you will enjoy this little investment. It will help you sleep so much better. Manta, sleep better anywhere, anytime. Harrington, come on here. Give us a story real quick. We'll have a little bit. You're good for a little bit more time, Anthony? Yeah, not too long?
Yeah.
Good man, good man. Thank you, sir. What have we got, Harrington?
Okay, you're looking for non-MMA, I'm assuming.
Let's have a laugh. Go on.
Okay.
Well, hold on.
You're going to give us something stupid.
Come on, then. Nothing stupid. It's like some of these are stupid. I was going to, I actually had a chat with Rebecca, but I'm not going to say it on air what I was going to say.
Okay.
A lot of the stories that you pick are Legion of Skanks-esque.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
So I will tell you this. So he did say it. I was picking. I literally was going through picking skank stories and BYM stories, and I was like, you know what? These are the smart, more highbrow stories I decided to send to you guys.
We're highly educated, intelligent people with a very sophisticated audience.
Okay. So
farts in jars, we're not interested in.
I didn't put the fart in jar. I saved that one.
You haven't. You did in the past. You did in the past.
All right. So how about this? A Florida woman spent her life savings, this is heartwarming, on her daughter's breast cancer treatment. A day after she got her last round of chemo, the mom went to the store, got herself a scratch-off lottery ticket for $10, turned it into $2 million.
That's crazy. That's incredible.
I love those stories. I do. It's fantastic. And there they are. Amazing. $2 million.
That's heartwarming. I like feel good stories like that. When I'm scrolling through Instagram, you know, like all the, you know, the stories, like the posts are all like an algorithm of the stuff that you already watch. So like I get a lot of those feel good stories because I don't know. I just like watching that kind of stuff. Maybe it just makes me feel better about myself. I don't know why. But I do like watching that kind of stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Everybody loves a good feel-good story. Some people, and I think that says something about you, love to see doom and gloom and misery. I'm not about that. I like to see feel-good stories. Although I can't, my mind's just gone here. And I hesitate to say this because I am not criticizing the United States at all because I choose to live here and I do love living
I know
here.
Where this is going.
But the fact that she has to spend her life savings when a child has cancer, you know, that's
terrible.
It blows my mind. You know, it is awful. Do you know? I mean, the healthcare in this country is just insanely expensive. In fact, I saw a piece on the news the other day where, what do they call it? Something tourism, hospital tourism or something like that they call it. Because people are flying to other countries to get medical treatment because it's so much cheaper. You can fly there, you can pay for your hotels and get the treatment you need. And it's still cheaper than here in the United States. You know, drugs, hospital visits, ambulances, it's just crazy. It's just bullshit, man. It is. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'm anti-USA. I fucking love living here and I choose to live here. And we have a fantastic life and it's a land of opportunity. It's incredible. But that shit needs to change, man. That's insane that a woman goes bankrupt. I could have a good life. Oh, I have got a good life. I could be, you know, doing well. My kids get cancer. People have to sell their cars, sell their home, go bankrupt. It's fucking it. And that's with insurance sometimes.
Right. I was going to say, and sometimes that's with insurance. That's absolutely crazy. We've had this insurance talk before too, like because, you know, we both pay out of, it's just private pay insurance and it's absolutely crazy. Did you guys remember that story? It just was, I don't know, a month ago where that lady from Georgia or Atlanta or something went to Mexico to get a tummy tuck because the plastic surgery was cheaper. And then it was like her and three guys. And then the cartel killed two of them and then had to give the other.
We talked about that.
Yeah. Did we talk about that? Yeah. That's That's the worst kind of medical tourism.
Yeah. Listen. So you got to be careful where you go because you do get what you pay for. And I will say this: right. I've had two knee replacements here in the States. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying, you know,
What's a knee replacement cost?
I run nearly every day. I did an hour this morning on the Peloton whilst doing mm-hmm. research, watching my fights, pop the laptop up. The knee replacements, I don't know, because no wonder my insurance bills are going up because I've had so many goddamn operations. But even the knee replacement, I think I saw and I messed it. I'm trying to remember, but on because you get a statement, don't you, of what the insurance yeah. pay. I think it's mm-hmm. like 40 grand is what the insurance yeah, company had to pay, something like that.
It's yeah, worth it, though. Look, you're running around.
I don't live in pain. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm in pain, but not from my knees. Yeah. But you have got to be careful when you're going out of the country to get things done. Like, there's all kinds of memes at the minute because, like, you know, people go to Turkey to get the teeth done. In Europe or in the UK, yeah. people are flying out to Turkey to get the teeth done. Oh, my God. Nightmares. You know what I mean? The horrific scenes that you see. Yeah, people's faces swelling up and they're going out there for plastic surgery. They're getting their tits done. Do you know what I mean? They're coming back and they are butchered. Do you know what I mean? Because it's just some asshole with no training. And you see it online. You're like, oh, sweet. Let's go to Turkey. Off we go. Yeah.
Well, I need to go to I think it's Bulgaria. I keep getting those messages for the hair plugs. I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm going to do it.
You got to do it, bro.
I'm thinking about doing it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I think so.
I know people in Bulgaria. Brother, I know people in Bulgaria.
Well, it's the same place that Cerrone got his done. So I think it's Bulgaria.
He went to Bulgaria to get his hair done.
Yeah, he went somewhere, yeah. I keep saying Bulgaria. I'm not 100% sure. It's on his Instagram, though, if Harrington wanted to look it up. It's a few posts back. It's a little ways back. Yeah. But yeah, he got his hair done.
And if the procedure was successful, what kind of hairstyle would we be going for, Anthony?
Oh, I'd have a full afro.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's a full
Gilbert afro. Burns.
Oh yeah, yeah, just like that.
Full on Gilbert Burns. Let's go.
Full on Gilbert Burns afro.
I will pay.
And there's people that get their facial hair done too. We're like, because mine comes in crazy. I'm not going to do this, but mine comes in really patchy, like on the sides. Well, there's some people that are getting like the little facial hair they have, they get it like plugged and then they have like these nice, full, real professional looking beards.
Brian O. Harrington, just look up, please, what that procedure costs to have done in Bulgaria or Turkey or wherever, somewhere cheap. And we can do a, we will all go. We will all go on tour, BYM tour to Bulgaria. I'll go catch up with my old peeps and we'll have it done. We'll blog the whole thing. We'll see it. We'll get wasted. We'll have fun. Anthony comes back with an afro and Harrington comes back with no teeth because by 2 weeks around him, we'll knock him out. Harrington, what have you found?
So it is in Turkey, actually. Turkey. And Francis Ngannou was the first UFC fighter to go under the knife. He recommended it to Cerrone, and now Cerrone is popularizing them pretty well. Brian saying here it costs about $3,450.
$3,450. The flights have cost more than that, though. That's the problem.
Yeah, right. Flights. It's not cheap to get there.
Flights are insane right now. I don't know if you've tried to book any flights. It's every weekend. Crazy.
Every weekend.
Yeah. I mean, international flights, though, because we're all going trying to go out to England to see my mom and see some family for summer. Mm-hmm. You know, parents are getting older, sadly. You know what I'm saying? So we want to see them and cherish them and enjoy them and, you know, and give them company as well. So we want to go see them. My God. For 5 economy flights from LA to London, it was almost $13,000. And I remember it used to be like $400 a piece. $13,000 is just insane.
The biz bings are flying economy?
Bro, at $13,000, we ain't going premium economy or business. Do you know what I mean? We're going to be sitting there like bloody Conor McGregor will have a field day when he sees this picture of us all sitting there in economy, all wedged in. I don't mind flying economy. I don't give a shit. I'm a man of the people and I'm also a cheap bastard. But 13 grand, that almost made my head fall off, you know?
So you're not going?
No, I haven't booked it yet because I'm like, don't come down. I always do this. Do you do this?
Because they go up.
They go up. I'm like, well, we're not booking that. Listen, they fluctuate. They'll go up, they'll go down. We'll just wait a few days. I've been looking every day and they're not coming down. No. The one day they drop, I'm booking them because I've got to go see my mom and dad.
Yeah, you guys don't do that.
Yeah. Now, if it was business, it'd be about 40 grand or something crazy. Like, I mean, who the fuck pays that? It's wild.
Yeah.
It's insane. It is insane. We'll go to questions in a minute. Harrington, do we have in MMA, we talked about Jake Paul. George St. Pierre saying that he might fight Floyd Mayweather. Harrington, just give us the background on that real quick, please.
So George St. Pierre was being interviewed during UFC 287. He said he's been he's had people reach out from, quote unquote, the most the best boxer of this generation for a boxing match. George said he would fight him, but he will not go and face the best boxer of his generation in straight boxing. That's too much of a disadvantage. He has to allow either leg kicks or takedowns. Pick one, but one of those two has to be allowed.
Did he ever say the name?
He eventually, when pressed by Aaron Bromster, he did admit that it was Floyd Mayweather.
Oh, okay, because people would have thought, people could have thought it was Jake Paul.
What do you think? Because that's never going to happen.
No, it's never happening ever. Because he's significantly bigger than Floyd already. People miss that a lot. They don't see Floyd very often, but he's a little guy. He's not very big. So him versus GSP, Floyd would already be at a disadvantage.
Yeah, well, I mean, Floyd is a tiny little man. He is
not a large
man. Some might say a pathetic excuse for a human being. Now let's have a look.
The biggest name in boxing came up to me to fight me in boxing. And I told him, I said, because for me, it's a question of honor. It's not a money. You cannot buy me. I'm too rich. I don't know if it's him personally who came or if it's his people or some serious promoter, but they asked me to box the biggest boxer of our time, and I said to him, I said, it's either you let me use my legs or the takedown. Oh, you will never go to the ground. I'm like, well, it's one or the other. I'm not gonna box the best boxer for money, you know. For me, it's you know, if they want to fight
that'll
me,
do,
they
Brian.
Have to accept
it's,
my turn. No, I'm not gonna
3 minutes long, but you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, Anthony. Because you're too rich. Well, you just said that. Not that celebrity net worth means anything, but he's got a net worth of $30 million. He doesn't need to go out there and box.
He said stuff like that because he's trying to be very humble when he says that. Some of it's the language barrier and like some of the context that he says it in, but he always says things like, I don't need to do this. You know what I mean? Like it's constantly like, I don't need to do this. I don't need the money. I'm not doing this for the money. Like, I want you to say you're already fucking rich. And they don't have enough money to convince you to go fight. Because that's what it comes
well,
down to.
Well, I don't think it's that because George takes his legacy very seriously. You know what I mean? And he wouldn't want to. I mean, you could. I think George could do okay in a boxing match against him. He's bigger. Floyd's getting older. He's going out there. He's getting decisions. He's winning decisions against Logan fucking Paul, for crying out loud. Yeah. You know, and I don't think anyone would judge George on that if he was to lose a demonstration bout against Floyd Mayweather. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, well, it's a bit of fun. It's a spectacle. People tune in, people watch, people pay, you make some money. It's not serious. Just like this, you know, this Jake Paul and all the rest of it stuff. It's not, I don't view it as serious boxing. When I watch, for example, we just had Anthony Joshua versus Jermaine Franklin. When I watch that or a proper boxing match, I'm like, yeah, this gets my attention. This is sports. I look at it from that lens. No disrespect to Jake Paul, but when I watch those kind of things or KSI, you know, this YouTuber thing, I look at it and I can still enjoy the product. You know, I still enjoy Tommy Fury and Jake Paul. I watched it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a competitive fight. But I don't look at it as real sports in the boxing world like it has any real kind of significance to the boxing world.
Well, like when I'm watching when I'm watching the UFC fights or, you know, even I watch all organizations, whether it's Bare Knuckle, Bellator, PFL, the UFC, I watch it all. I'm glued to the screen. Like I don't want to miss anything. When I'm watching a boxing match, like a Tyson Fury or Deontay Wilder or whoever, I'm glued to the screen. Like you see some of these, I don't want to call them circus shows because I feel like that's just being disrespectful, but these YouTuber Jake Paul type of fights, I mean, I got friends around. I'm having a drink. I'm eating chips. Like, I'm barely paying attention for the most part. Like, I watch the fight, but I'm not really paying attention. If that makes any sense. It's entertaining.
You're DC commentating.
But I don't.
I'm joking. I only said that because DC eats a ton. He eats a lot of food. I'm joking. Love DC. He's a fantastic commentator. That was just funny. A stupid joke.
That's funny. It's a good one. But that's how I. That's how I watch him. I'm watching, but I'm not like not invested.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I think we all agree. But still, we will watch Nate Diaz versus Jake Paul very, very closely. So, All right. Listen. Again, we don't want to keep you too long, Anthony, so we'll just do some questions now. We'll let you get out of it. We appreciate your time. We appreciate you guys. But we like the interaction. Send in some questions, please, to bympod@gmail.com. Make them fun. Make them interesting. Make them insightful, inspiring, whatever it is you're going through. We're here to offer you words of wisdom and advice from the Lionheart and the Count, Harrington.
Oh,
you would think at some point he would just dive
ready.
In. He'd time it so that when I went to Harrington, don't it'd be there, or even come on as I'm talking. You don't have to talk and interrupt. One day that will be seamless, but in 8 years we're still not there.
If you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you find podcasts, make sure you subscribe to the show. Leave us a 5-star rating, positive review. It really helps out on those platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to subscribe to the channel and you hit that notification bell to find out whenever a new video drops. And if you want to catch over 400 episodes you can't find anywhere else, completely ad-free and uncensored, head to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get yourself a 7-day free trial. Check out over 20 great shows on the net.
Thank you very much, Harrington.
And look, Brian's right there, ready to go.
Seamless. See the timing on that? Seamless.
Perfect.
Like a pro.
Couldn't even tell.
Every time.
So the first question we got here today is from Dr. Auto Art, and he has a question about censorship on MMA broadcasts.
Ooh. Hey, BYM team. Sending you this message from Leeds in England. Just got a question for you guys about bad language in live sporting events. We just had a great fight this weekend. And BT Sport were telling us they had the best ever post-fight speech. But we didn't hear it in the UK because BT Sport kept on muting the microphone every couple of seconds because of a few bad words. In MMA, there's blood, there's knockouts, anything can happen. Yet, we're not allowed to hear a few bad words. Yeah, it's just a bit annoying, really. Just finished painting this picture of Izzy. If you guys would like one doing it yourself, hit me up, let me know. Keep up the amazing work. Anthony, good luck in your next fight. I know you're going to smash it. Michael, you're a legend. Brian, keep up the great producing. And Harrington, fucking congratulations on your new edition. Keep up, guys. Cheers.
Thank you very much. I got to say, that picture in the background
that was awesome.
Is awesome. Yeah. And you know what would look awesome in your background? A mural.
Yeah.
Of us, not just you. Yeah.
Whatever he wants to paint, I would love to have one.
If you want to send us bespoke pieces of art, we'll take it.
We will.
Brian, what were we going to say?
I was going to say he offered to make pieces, so I'll be in touch.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll take them. Right. Brian will take one. Harrington will take one. We'll all take them. We'll give you a plug as well on the show. So pay-per-views, they allow the swearing. Mm-hmm. They do that. So in the States, and you know what? I mean, I work for BT and they're a tremendous company and they do fantastic things to support the sport and broadcast it throughout the UK. And some of their promotional pieces are awesome. But that was a pay-per-view, I believe. I might be wrong, but I think it was a pay-per-view at the weekend. So yeah, it must just be something to do with the, what do you call it? Like the rules like of the regulations.
Yeah,
the broadcast rules that make them have to bleep it out, which is frustrating because I have seen that sometimes when you watch it ruins the moment and the emotions. We saw it perfectly. Yeah. It was on pay-per-view. They don't give a damn. Mm-hmm. And they don't give a shit, Anthony.
Yeah, no, the only other time I've seen it bleeped out like that in the UFC is when I went off on Ryan Spann. I was just...
Oh, really?
Remember, it was with you were holding the microphone. It was like fuck was every other word.
Oh yeah. No, that's right.
They ended
up
bleeping that pretty heavy too, and I don't know why. It was on ESPN Plus, so it should have been bleeped. But you know what? It was one of those simulcasts on big ESPN as well on regular TV. Mick Maynard and Sean Shelby, or I think it was Sean Shelby, the day of the weigh-ins, pulls us all, have, you know, that little quick meeting we have before, begs us all, please, please, please don't curse on in your post fight because we're on big ESPN and you guys can't curse. So we're like, yeah, we won't. We got you, boss. I got you, boss. Michael Bisping sticks a microphone in my face and I fuck 477 times.
Yeah. Well, it's hard because I was going to ask you then, because obviously it's been a long time since I fought, but when we used to be on Fox, if it's on ESPN, those big things, just like BT Sport, to answer the guy's question. And thank you for the kind words, by the way. That's the thing. If it's TV, they don't want you swearing. You know what I mean? Which is weird because after a certain time, they can have movies on that have the F-bombs and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. If it's pay-per-view, that doesn't matter. But when they always do the meetings, right after the weigh-ins, it's sometimes Dana, sometimes it's Sean or Mick or whatever. Back in the day, it was always Dana. They tell you the bonuses because now it's set 50K. But back in the day, it was like, you know, how big it's trending, you know, how generous Dana's feeling. You can get it a little bit different, you know. But they would always end with, please, please, whatever you do, don't swear. And that's corner men as well. And you still hear it sometimes, the corner men. Mm-hmm. Sometimes whoever's censoring it, they miss it on the corner men sometimes because it kind of sneaks through. But do they still do that these days, Anthony?
It depends on what we're on. If we're on ESPN Plus, the whole show is just on ESPN Plus, we can say whatever we want. The prelims that are broadcast on ESPN, though, like a lot of the pay-per-view prelims are on regular, like big ESPN or ABC or whatever, then they'll tell those guys you can't curse. A pay-per-view, we can do whatever we want. But so they'll tell us where we can and where we can't.
Right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And I hope that answers your question because kind of does make sense. It's TV. Mm-hmm. It's TV and we don't own the TV networks.
So our next question here is from Mr. Glenn Stern. He's asking about finding McDojos.
Oh,
what's up, BOIM pod? I had a couple questions, so I'll try and keep it short. The thing about joining jiu-jitsu, I was wondering what jiu-jitsu classes, how do you know what's a good jiu-jitsu class? Do they have qualifications or certifications or anything? Or is there a price range I should be looking at? And my second question was, should I be in good cardio shape before I try jiu-jitsu? Because I used to wrestle for 4 years in high school, and if I step in a wrestling mat right now, I'd be puking all over the place. Thank you for taking my question. Fuck you, Harrington. Congrats on the baby. And peace.
Some good questions there, actually.
Yeah.
I think, because there is a lot of charlatans out there, just like in any walk of life, and martial arts is more popular than it's ever been. There's a lot of people that still, I mean, McDojo, as Brian said, that's a great Instagram page. I always give them a shout out. Do you follow them, Anthony?
I do.
Some of the nonsense that people buy into is just wild. I think if you're a pretty level-headed person, you could determine whether or not some of the moves you're being shown would work in a real-life situation. And if you're getting something out of it, that's the main thing. If you go there, you enjoy it, you're getting something out of it and you feel fulfilled, you feel that you've learned something, you had a good time, you had some positive interactions, you broke a sweat, you burned some calories, well, hey, that's worthwhile. But Anthony, out here doing jiu-jitsu or signing up can be very expensive. What would you say is a fair monthly fee to join a jiu-jitsu program?
Man, I don't even know. Let's say if you're doing just jiu-jitsu and you're not kind of doing the unlimited classes where you do all the classes, I'll be honest, I don't even know.
It varies.
I would say, it varies so much because I know out here in like Denver, crazy expensive, like $250 or $300 a month.
Same in Orange County. It's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I would say fair would be like $120 to $135 or something if you're doing just jiu-jitsu. I think that would be fair. I did see in his background, though, he had a bunch of Chicago stuff, like some Bears and some Cubs. So I don't know if he's in the Chicago area, but if you are, a friend of mine owns and runs Mission MMA and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. It's called Mission. It's a fantastic place, really family-friendly, super cool. There's not a whole shit ton of fighters there, but their jiu-jitsu and their kickboxing programs are a lot of fun. So there's a I don't even want to say it's a shameless plug. It's just a place that I know is a legitimate.
Mission MMA Jiu-Jitsu. You recommend them. Yeah. I'm sure it
It's a cool place. It's a place you can go in safely, know that you're not going to, this isn't a McDojo type of place. It's safe. Mm. It's, they know what they're doing. So it's a cool place.
Yeah. Basically, if you're looking to do jiu-jitsu, if it's Japanese jiu-jitsu, you're probably going to be on the money. If it's ninjitsu, you probably want to never, ever show your face in there ever again. Never. And even as much as I hate to say it, Japanese jiu-jitsu is a great place and there's some good techniques, but there's also a bit of nonsense as well. But yeah, it is a good art form. It's a good thing to start on. It's not all legit, but there's some legit elements to it. I think, You know, over here, martial arts, I say over here, you know, in the States, it's become kind of corporate to a certain degree, hasn't it? You know, because in the UK, and obviously I haven't lived there for a while, but I know a lot of the gyms that I used to train at. And when I was a kid, certainly, and again, that's a long time ago, but you pay when you go. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Maybe you can tell me it's different, but it's like £5 a session. Or whatever. Mm-hmm. In the States, it's, oh, you're signing up, you want to come, 150 a month, boom, locked in. You know what I mean? In the UK, I think I might be wrong, but certainly in like some of the smaller towns, it's still in like the town hall on a Wednesday night.
Yeah.
They rent that, they get the mats out, you know, and you pay a fiver every time you go. Maybe I'm old and way behind the
time. Well, it's probably not a fiver anymore, but it's probably, you know, there's drop-in fees are like $20 these days.
Yeah.
So
the good old days.
The good old days.
And then what was the last one? Oh, being in shape. Here's what I'll say to you, buddy. Just go.
Because
you're never going to find the perfect time. And a good gym, a good instructor, they're not going to kill you. You're going to go even if you're out of shape. You're going to get in better shape by going. And when you can't continue, you just tap and you say, oh, I'm exhausted. I need to sit this round out. And you will enjoy it. And jiu-jitsu is not about that. Is that about
there's only one way to get in jiu-jitsu shape. That's by doing jiu-jitsu. You can take an Olympic marathon runner and throw them in a jiu-jitsu class. They're going to gas in 5 seconds. So like that type of conditioning is just different. So wrestling conditioning is very similar. Like the only way to really get in condition to do that is to do it.
You know, it's easy for us to be hypocritical, though, and say stuff like this, because I just recall the conversation I had with Chito Vera. After his fight, I think it was against Rob Font, we were talking afterwards. He says, Mike, you haven't been in the gym for ages. Get your ass in the gym. And I said, but I'm a bit out of shape right now. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of embarrassing because when you go in, you're a former world champ, they expect you to still be bloody doing what you do. I said, I'm out of shape. I'm a bit overweight. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to get in shape first. And Cheeto's like, well, just come to the gym. Get in shape by coming to the gym. And I'm like, I'm going to do a pre-training camp before I show my face. So it's easy for us to sit here and say, just go. But I totally get it. You know what I mean?
It's tough.
Yeah, we'll do one more. Brian, what do we have, buddy?
All right, so next question we got here is from Mike Slow, and he's an amateur fighter looking for a little bit of advice.
Love that.
What's up, Bisbing? What's up, Anthony? Harrington, Brian, how you guys doing? As somebody who has been involved with MMA in one shape or another for a while, been watching since about 08, been training for the last couple of years. I've done karate when I was younger, wrestling when I was younger, Muay Thai during the pandemic, just joined MMA school. I was wondering, you hear some people talk about taking 10 amateur fights in a year, 15 over 2 years. Do you think that's a better plan for somebody coming in as late as I am? Obviously, I'm no spring chicken. I'm going to be 29 this year, but I also don't have a whole lot of wear and tear on my body like most athletes at my age would. Do you think it'd be better to take higher steps up in competition as an amateur, take less fights, or to get as many fights as you can in, like, say, a boxer would? Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Go ahead.
In my opinion, it would matter kind of where you're at, where he's at technically, and, you know, how much experience he has. If he was a good wrestler, then maybe you can take some higher, you know, higher, tougher fights, I guess, higher level amateur fights. But generally, my opinion is always the same. It's take as many amateur fights as you possibly can. And it sucks because you're fighting for free and you feel like you're training for free. But you know what? That's the goddamn game. I had 27 or 28 amateur fights on top of the 50, whatever I have pro. but that's kind of where you practice. I know, I get it. It feels real when you're an amateur, and this is the end of the world if you can't get a win. But at the end of the day, as soon as you go pro, they wipe that record clean. It's like it never fucking happened. So the amateurs is where you go to make your mistakes and figure out at game time speed where your reactions are and what your instincts are and how to, because you can fix things in practice and in sparring, and you can see where you're making mistakes. But when it feels like it's for all the marbles and you're in the most chaotic, stressful situation that you've probably ever been in, that's when you're going to find out what you need to fix. And that's where you're going to find out who you really are as a fighter. And then you start molding the rest of your game around that. So my opinion has always been take as many amateur fights as you can.
And at 28, you know, you're almost 29. If this is something you want to do, you've still got the time to do it, but mm-hmm. you haven't got time to waste. You know what I'm saying? Right. If he wants to make a career out of it or have a go at being a pro. But what you said is absolutely spot on. I think the reason, you know, because like for me, when I was growing up, I started doing, as I said a moment ago, traditional martial arts. I did mm-hmm. Japanese jiu-jitsu. I did a little bit of judo. I did a lot of kickboxing. I did some karate tournaments. I did grappling tournaments. I did, it was kind of like MMA. It was called Knockdown Sport Budo, where everything mm-hmm. all went and there was no gloves on, but no headshots, you know. And I did so many traditional tournaments growing up, you know, where you have four or five matches, not fights, matches on a day. And they're essentially amateur fights. You know what I'm saying? They're just not right. classed as amateur MMA fights. And mm-hmm. I think back in the day, and this is kind of, it's good, but it's also kind of detrimental to new fighters, because back in the day, people will start off as a martial artist first and mm-hmm. then drift into mixed martial arts. So they always had a lot of extensive background in that martial art. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Competing.
Like they're already a specialist somewhere.
Or an international, but they get used to that game day nerves, being right. on the mat, just you and an opponent, one-on-one with a crowd watching. Doesn't matter how big or small it is, it's still nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. Wrestlers, they have an advantage because they're doing that throughout high school and college and so on and so forth. So they get used to that all the time. But now we see people start in MMA at an early age, which is fantastic because we're getting a whole new breed and they're getting exposed to these skills. So by the time they make it to the UFC, they're even better than the last generation, but they are kind of forfeiting that traditional tournament format where you learn to deal with the nerves, the game day anxiety, where you make mistakes. And granted, yes, you talk about amateur fights, you should have as many amateur fights as possible, you know, but you also want to try and do individual martial art tournaments as well, whether that 100%. Be amateur boxing, kickboxing, karate, jiu-jitsu, wrestling, mm-hmm. of course, and that yep. all falls into the pot. You know what I mean, though?
100% agree. 100% agree. And I think that is kind of, I think that because the MMA kind of space that we're in right now is you're not getting those specialists, guys that were fantastic kickboxers moving over, the jiu-jitsu world champions that are moving over. I think that they need to get more competition in the amateurs, whether that's amateur fights or, like you said, like lots of jiu-jitsu tournaments, lots of whatever. They need to get that competition experience. So it's hard enough fighting in the UFC when the lights are going crazy and, you know, people are going nuts. I got 50 fights and it's still sometimes you're like, holy shit. Like if you've never done that ever before, you know, that's tough. So that's my opinion. I don't know if it's right or it's wrong, but that's how nope. I look at it.
It's the correct, I'm signing off on that one. It's the correct opinion. And Lucas has started mixed martial arts training now. He's absolutely loving it. The Den, you gave a shout out to Mission, was it? Mm-hmm. Mission yep, Jiu-Jitsu Mission. And MMA in Chicago. The Den Training Center, Yorba Linda, California. You can find me hanging about, watching Lucas, driving his, doing his head in. I'll be teaching some guest kickboxing classes here and there on occasion as well. Okay. But the Den Training Center, Yorba Linda, beautiful new place. Check it out. That's the show. Thank you all for watching. Anthony right. Smith, what's the rest of the training week look like?
Oh man, I'm going to strength and conditioning right now. I'm going to get off of here and walk right out the door. Thursday's pretty easy. Friday sparring. Super sneaky. Make sure none of you guys tell anybody, but I'm sneaking home tomorrow and not telling anybody. It's my wife's birthday tomorrow. She doesn't know I'm coming home. I'm surprising her for dinner. She doesn't watch this shit.
She doesn't watch the show. Does she fuck? No. Does she fuck? No. Hey, well, listen, have a great weekend, man. You deserve it. As always, I say it every time, but we do appreciate you making the time whilst you're in training camp because it's stressful. Enjoy the time. Enjoy the wife. Enjoy the birthday. Get the hell out of here. We'll see you all on Monday. Yeah.